Welcome to Tailboard Talk with Dane Carley, Craig Nelson, and Jeff Wallen. Every month we explore different topics of interest to you, our cohorts in fire and emergency services. So whether you sit back and listen, sound off on the message board, or call in live to be part of the conversation, we welcome you to join us in our mission to improve the fire service for those we serve and those we serve beside. Now coming to you live from the Great White North, this is Tailboard Talk on Fire Engineering Talk Radio.
Hey, welcome to Tailboard Talk for Friday, January 7th, 2022. I'm Jeff.
I'm Craig.
And I'm Chris.
Yeah, it's colder than crap here right now.
We've had a wicked, wicked cold streak.
I don't like it.
I don't either. It gets tougher every year. When you reach temperatures 20, 30 below zero, it just is too cold. It's hard on vehicles, hard on houses, hard on people.
Right. We had interviews for new employees last week, and I was in the lobby of the fire station after it was 20 below or 20 plus, and I said that to the kid that was applying that maybe we should move somewhere else. I think maybe you're not quite mentally stable to be working up here in Fargo or in that area, so we should look for a department in Florida or something if it's available.
It's funny how often that conversation comes up. We were just talking about that this morning, too. Maybe we should be looking at jobs somewhere down south. Because when we say 20 and 30 below zero, we're talking true air temperature. We're not talking wind chills. Because you want to add the wind chills in, well, let's drop it anywhere from 50 to 80 below zero, because right. It gets ridiculous.
So who's the unstable weird ones? The ones who don't have the stamina to maybe be chucking it out up here? Or is it Oscar being too stupid to find almost anywhere else on the planet?
Yeah, I mean, it's. I was born and raised here, you know, so it's you're kind of used to it. I remember we were just talking about that. After elementary school or junior high, you'd run home and grab your ice skates, head to the rink.
Yep.
20 below was the best time because that was the best ice, fastest ice, crisp.
Fast, yep.
And then the wind's not blowing
either. I can't even imagine.
Either.
I wouldn't even get in my car and drive my kid to the rink right now.
Yeah.
Down in Minneapolis, they just had the Outdoor Classic with the Wild and the Blues. And I think in puck drop, it was 8 below zero.
Right.
And even as a huge hockey fan, I kind of went, boy, I should have gone to that. But it's kind of nice watching it inside.
I had the game on, too, and my son was back on break. And I said, there's no way in heck you would find me at that game. He's like, really? I think it would be kind of fun. I go, not at my age.
I found something out of COVID that I didn't expect to. So my youngest son just graduated last year from high school, and so he's in college right now. But he's still got friends from the class below him that are still in sports. So there's kids that we know that are still there at the school. And we kind of wanted to watch the football team play again this season because we knew a lot of the kids and some of the parents. And so the very first game we found was being co-broadcasted online from just like an online company that does that kind of thing for free with a few ads mixed in here or whatever. But they got, like two different cameras up on the, up in the press box or whatever. The cheaper places will have like a camera that automatically pans and tries to find the game plan stuff. Cause I mean, they've got basketball and volleyball games and like all this high school sports stuff is online now where you can find it. And so we didn't venture out of the house for a single high school football game because we said, why would we go out in the cold to watch our son's friends, our former friends, play when you can sit right here at home and just dial it up on YouTube on the big screen TV?
Yeah,
it was wonderful.
I don't want to get into this conversation, but I have a niece that plays volleyball in Oregon. Oregon, whatever they pronounce it.
Oregonians.
And she's a junior in high school, and I've watched every one of her games. Same way.
Isn't that great?
Yeah. It's not ESPN by any means, but you get to watch and see the couple cameras, and it's enjoyable. So, otherwise, I'd never be able to watch your play.
Yeah. If there's one positive thing that's come out of that is people having to find ways to get families to be able to watch their kids locally has turned into this huge other side benefit of friends, family from across the country can watch people they know. Do this kind of stuff.
So we've talked about extreme cold weather. We've talked about sitting in our house watching our local high school games. So we're actually looking for employees in Fargo-Moorhead area. Anybody that wants to move up to the Great North would be awesome. It'd be awesome. Yeah. I'm sure we didn't really advertise it very well there in the beginning, but
we'll put our plug out. Yeah, nationwide, internationally, we'll put our plug out.
The best part about this time of year, 6-7 months of the year, there's no mosquitoes.
No, okay. We should be none.
Good. It really is. Our summers truly are wonderful, which is part of what keeps us here.
Right.
Is the summers are great. It's just this. The winters can get long, but they can get wicked cold, and it's kind of sad when today it got above zero. It actually felt warm outside.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
Like, I put on my cargo shorts and my flip-flops and headed out to get the mail.
Yeah,
exactly. Ooh, it's 3 degrees. Yeah. 3 degrees.
It's spring already.
No, so, not Celsius, Fahrenheit. It's 3 degrees.
Yeah, we deal with some wicked cold. And to be honest, fighting fire in the wicked, wicked cold is not fun. It's just purely miserable. But in general, I've always told people, actually fighting fire is usually in the winter, if it's normal below freezing temperatures, is actually pretty comfortable if you're working.
Right.
Yes.
It's actually with our gear, that's great. I think about the people down south in the summers and the heat.
Right.
Texas, Arizona, Florida, California, some of those where you go, my God, when it's 90, 100 degrees, because it does get that up here once in a while, too, in the summers. That, to me, is a lot more miserable than the cold. I'll put my turnout gear on and wear that, fighting a fire in the cold any day over 90, 100 degrees.
Yeah, I don't know if this is appropriate for the radio show, but I always say I can always put more layers on. I can't get more naked.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And we wouldn't want you to.
No.
Yeah.
Even on the radio.
Body for radio. So what's the topic tonight, guys?
I thought you were segueing right in.
Yeah.
We're going to jump right into there.
Well, you brought up that we're looking for people, and I'm guessing this is something that a lot of fire departments are running into. We see it with our neighbor law enforcement agencies. They are always looking for people these days. It's not something that a lot of people are looking and going into. Again, we find them rewarding careers working in public safety, but we are putting more and more efforts toward recruitment and retention, and I think that's something all public safety agencies are going to do, both police and fire. We're going to have to be looking at in the future, and we're going to have to try and start being a lot more active than we ever have been. And I remember years ago, there was kind of an attitude of, well, we're the fire department. Everybody wants to work here. So we didn't really recruit or worry about recruiting. I think HR, from what I remember, would put the ad in the paper, and we'd get 100 people show up at a test or more.
Right.
And now we actually go out of our way. We have a whole recruitment committee with a lot of people on our department that want to see the department succeed and want to recruit people and want to improve diversity and all of that kind of stuff. And we put a lot more effort into it, and we get less numbers.
Right. So 28 years ago or 29 years ago, I sat in a gymnasium in Fargo with 300 other people and tested for the position of firefighter. How many people did we have last time, Craig?
We had in the mid-40s.
Right. We had 40 people taking the test compared to 300 back in the day. And some of that, you know, I would guess we've upped our requirements a little bit.
Yep.
You know, a little more education, post-high school education. We're looking for some stuff like that. That's changed. You know, that would have probably drove out, well, back then, 28 years, probably drove out 200 of those people. You know,
yep.
Maybe a third had a college education at that time. Mm-hmm. We're not saying we have to have a college education now, but we have 90 credits, is it?
60.
60 credits. So,
yep.
So you're looking at 2 years of at least college or higher education after college. That can obviously drive number changes.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know what do you guys have in mind?
So our pre-hire requirements for the longest time have been IFSAC or Pro Board Firefighter 2, National Registry, EMT Basic. Those are the essentials, basically, right there. You know, driver's license, high school, high school graduation or equivalent. And for the longest time, we would typically get about 75 applications. About 50 of those would be qualified to come in and test, and we typically have about 40 to 45 that would show up for the test.
Sure.
Which I thought were decent numbers for Moorhead. When I took the test, we had about 100 people that were in the group that I tested with back in 94. And down in the Twin Cities, a group of 300 or less would be small in a fire department that was testing.
Right.
So I was amazed at the numbers when I came here. But we started to see our numbers drop off two tests ago, to where the numbers dropped off by about 10 to 15%.
Sure.
And this last test that we ran about 2.5 years ago, we had just under 30 applicants. Of those, we qualified somewhere in the neighborhood of 18 to test. And of those, six people showed up to write the test.
Six?
Six.
And that's where, so I should clarify too, when I say mid-40s, that's the number of people that qualified to take our test. We had like mid-50s that qualified as applicants. Then I say then 40 were invited. We had 50-some applicants, 40-some were invited to test that met the standard. And then, yeah, we had less than that show up. It wasn't quite as dramatic as yours.
Mm-hmm.
But you look at that and you go, it's I don't want to say sobering. It's not bad. We're still meeting what we need.
Right.
So
and getting good qualified candidates.
Yes, to give perspective. So for Fargo, again, we're not a big department. We have 125 people on our department, and we run usually two classes, hiring classes a year now is what we're seeing. And so we're going to start a class in February. We'll have six people from our own department, and we do joint recruit academies with a neighboring department. And so we'll have nine total recruits in that academy class. But one of the big changes we made is, I don't remember how many years ago now, six years ago, we went from testing every 2 years to testing every year, because what we were finding is, with a two-year test, which to me, every department I've known, that's what they've
standard.
Done for nationwide for years. You test every 2 years. What we were finding is you get into the second year and everybody's kind of going, looking at you like, really, you think I'm going to hang around to get hired there for more than a year?
You got another fire department
yeah,
job.
Yeah, I got another job somewhere else.
Yep.
And we're seeing more full-time fire jobs.
Yep.
So people have more, even in the northern Midwest here, we're seeing more full-time fire departments, and they're all hiring, so people aren't waiting around 2 years. So we went to testing every year now.
Sure.
So we test annually. We used to test every 2 years and do a list of 20 people. Now we test every year and do a list of 15. And now we're running into where our turnover is getting higher, to the point where I'm thinking in the next year or two, we're going to have to do two tests a year.
Yeah.
Because we can only do right now a list of 15, or we have to go to the Civil Service Commission and can we do a list of 20 or 30, because we're going to have some bigger classes coming up. But that was probably one of the biggest changes we made, is we're testing every year now. We take applications every year to be more timely and to not keep people waiting for 2 years. And I think that's helped some, but it's actually getting competitive now, to where we're competing against all the other fire departments to hurry up and get our stuff out there to get our our applicants' offers.
So we used to test every 2 years as well. We just went to testing as we have openings, and a list probably not to extend more than about a year.
Yeah.
We haven't had any openings in the last 2.5 years. We will next year.
Oh,
wow.
It's just been happenstance lull where we haven't had that need, or we've hired from other positions in the city, and not for firefighters, but for some other officers or positions. But yeah, we're in that same point. We're not going to do just a test every 2 years. We're not going to have a list that's that long. It's not going to be valid long enough for it to be that useful. And I guess our last process, out of the six that applied and took the test, we found during the interview phase, five of them we were comfortable hiring. So to say that we had five valid candidates for one opening is great. Well, we only had one opening, so what if you had two or three?
Sure.
And what does that say about a year from now when we're trying to hire? Can we keep those pre-hire requirements the same. We had dropped down from, not with the firefighters yet, but with our other positions, we dropped down to National Registry of EMT basic, not recommended, but that's our desired qualification. Sure. But it was not a prerequisite. So if you didn't have it, we would allow you to go through training after you get on board. And that's probably how our firefighter hiring is going to be this next time. EMT, you can get it afterwards.
That's a big change for us also. Is that's what we've always done is if you didn't have your EMT, you could get it in your first year. And we would allow you the time off work if you had class that night, etc. And we've started teaching it in-house now. So we'll take you if you got your if you're an EMT, if you're a paramedic, we'll take you in a heartbeat. But if you don't have it, we'll also take you, and then we'll run you through that EMT class ourselves.
Sure.
Because it started to become a scheduling nightmare trying to get people to classes on Tuesday and Thursday nights and this and that. And so we just went, no, we're actually, and so we run them through that condensed, we do it in 4 weeks, we run them through the EMT basic, and it's not basic anymore, but EMT in a month,
yeah.
And then they go right on shift, and then the shifts can fully use them rather than put them on shift and they don't have their EMT. Well, they can't really help on medicals.
Right. You know,
they can help a little, but not. It tied our hands a lot, and it made scheduling complicated. But it also helps us with applicants because because you don't have your EMT doesn't then eliminate you. And so that's one way where we're trying to help get more applicants in, too. Another, I shouldn't say one way, but we've made quite a few changes.
Right.
There was a full-time department very recently up in Iron Range, pretty substantial size, that has, from what I've understood, this is just what I've heard around the table, so you got to know that it's true when I heard it around the table at the fire station, but they've done two rounds of testing to try to fill the openings that they have in their department, and from the first round they didn't get enough folks and had to do it again. I don't think they fully filled all their positions in the second round, but they were also offering lateral transfers within the state of Minnesota. During the first round, I think they opened it up to anywhere, saying if you had 3 years of career experience in Ames, Iowa, you'll start with 3 years of experience in Duluth.
Wow.
3 years of seniority, where whatever your pay, whatever your vacation, all the benefits, you're not going to start from scratch and start over here to try to get people in the door to test, to try to fill the openings. So that's got, and I was really surprised at that because I thought this bigger department would be one of these key magnets.
Sure.
In the state, that boy, if I was going to work anywhere, I'd maybe want to work here or here or here in the state, you know, some of the big boy players or whatever, and to find that they're starting to offer incentives like that to try to get people in the door in the first place kind of surprised me.
Yeah.
They're still struggling with that. They've also combined with the other career departments in their immediate area to do joint testing and to do a joint academy for their folks, like you're seeing here in the Fargo area starting. And
right,
we might be in that same boat with y'all here
pretty soon.
Those are conversations we have. Those are conversations I have with our chief, and we're talking about, is this something we should do? If so, how do you do it? Those types of things, because it's getting more difficult. There are a lot of people working from home right now, and they really enjoy that. So when you're talking public safety, now you're talking jobs where, well, one, you can't work from home, and two, we expect you to work weekends, evenings, and holidays too. And that's not real popular. We're combating some big issues.
That was two of my questions. It was, what's causing it, and what can government do to improve it? And you kind of touched base on it a little bit with, you know, we're battling, you know, obviously employment around here is pretty good. The economy is very good in the Midwest.
Yep.
But they have so many options. Mm-hmm. People that are looking for employment have so many options right now that it's causing some issues, I think. I'll take this job. I can work from home half the time, make what we make, you know, as beginning firemen.
When we started, it was, my gosh, if you'll hire me as a firefighter, I'm there.
Right.
And now there are more jobs than there are people. So it's kind of, the power's a little bit shifted. I don't want to say it's completely in their hands either, but we sit in on these applicant offers and stuff, and we're seeing for the first time, it's kind of shocking, candidates that are, well, let me think about it. You're going, what? What did you say?
Let me think about it.
Yeah, yeah. Because it's so foreign. It's very foreign to me.
Yeah.
I worked in the airlines, and I got laid off there, and I worked in fire. And I'm just happy to have a job and appreciate having a job because of what I went through. Now, this generation is going through a different economy, a different work set of work rules as far as what's available, and there's more available to them. So I don't fault them for it either, to look at their options and go, well, what's the best option for me? I just didn't have those options. I had, you can either have this job or you don't have a job.
Right.
Well, you know, a few things happened at the beginning of COVID that made a lot of sense that you had to do. So, like our Walmarts in our area, every Walmart was a 24-hour Walmart store, almost to the point of the entire year long. Didn't matter the holiday. I don't know if they were still closed on Christmas Day, and
there was some
maybe Easter or something. But it was getting down to less, you know, that's almost 365.
Right.
But of course, so they shut down 24-hour operation. Didn't have the customer need or didn't have the employees or what have you. But, you know, they shut down to scaled back hours for a while. I think they were only open till like 7 or 8 o'clock at night during like the worst of it. And all of our grocery stores in town were all 24-hour grocery stores.
Yeah.
And they all did the same thing, shut down. Nobody opened overnight. Lots of the gas stations that had been 24-hour gas stations closed down to get gas at the pumps, but there's nobody inside working overnight and all that. And even though we're facing the Omicron ramp up right now and the Delta variant before it, it seemed like society returned to normal a little bit before the Delta variant.
Right.
And as things were opening back up again, store hours pushing back to 10 o'clock at night, maybe 11 o'clock at night. And that's where it all stopped. I mean, our Walmarts here are still not back in 24-hour operation. None of the grocery stores on our side of the river, on the Minnesota side, are 24 hours yet. Maybe there are one or two in Fargo, but
I'm not out after 11, so I don't know.
But I'm also wondering, since
usually in bed by 8:30,
the bars are still open.
Yeah. Since the retailers haven't returned to pre-COVID conditions and the gas stations haven't, and a lot of companies are still working on weird restricted hours because of staffing availability. If it's that, you know, there were people who either wanted to work those third shift hours or those are the hours that they could get.
Yeah.
But I think the whole labor market has shifted in that this idea of doing off-schedule type work now has been gone just long enough from our society that the idea of, hold on, I'm going to work when?
Right.
I don't think so.
Right.
Why would you need to? That companies are retooling to be able to do things during normal work hours when they can get the people who want to work, and who truly wants to work overnight.
Right.
Who truly wants to work weekends. It's hard to get those times, but overnights are probably the worst, and we can't shut down overnight.
Well, we can't. Yeah, so we have a few different ideas we're floating around here, and one of them is what do we do with our work schedules, and that's kind of where we wanted to go with this part of the show tonight is the work schedule. But I think part of it ties into government and public safety trying to be more flexible too.
Right.
So Chris and I were just talking this morning because again we have some conditional job offers out, and we were looking at our schedule, and I've always, of course, we have discussions about, do you change your shift schedule? And right now we have all of our operations personnel work 24-hour shifts. And I've always thought of it, I guess, traditionally in the past, that, well, if we change our schedule, you have to change it for everybody. And more recently, I've thought of it more as, well, no, it doesn't mean you'd have to put everybody, say you go from a 24-hour schedule to 10s and 14s, you wouldn't have to put everybody on 10s and 14s. Maybe you could do a modified. And the whole point of the discussion is to recruit, retract, and retain more good fire personnel. And so if we can give them flexibility in their schedule, and that will help us get more people and or retain more of the people we currently have, then that's probably something we need to look at.
Right.
Because we are seeing a few more people that actually don't want the 24-hour schedule. Traditionally for us here, everybody loves the 24-hour schedule. I still love the 24-hour schedule even though I don't work it.
Love it.
But we are seeing a few more people because of kids and families and et cetera. They don't want that 24-hour schedule. They want to be on a more regular schedule. So then, as a department, can we do a happy medium where we offer both schedules, and then as a person has seniority, you can hold one or the other, and then you have the flexibility to. You have some people that want that schedule that they're not gone 24 hours, then they can have the schedule where they're not gone 24 hours. You have some that want that, they can have that too then.
Right. Yeah, it's an interesting discussion, and it has surfaced in the recent, you know, 6-7 months of discussion about it. My attitude has changed towards it, because 5 years ago I would have said, get lost.
Yep.
24 hours, nothing. You guys are idiots.
Yep.
I don't need you. But I also don't have the workforce I used to have either, the options. Or that threat, I guess, against not really an employee, but myself or whatever, would say that this is my job schedule. So, yeah, I think looking into those opportunities. And we're at a size that I think it intrigues me, because we could, you know, overstaff certain times of the day, you know, a little bit. Instead of adding like a fourth shift to add to the manpower, we add something, or we take off some of the shifts, and some trucks
staff the busier hours.
Right, and then that gives us opportunities for some of our employees to go to training to, you know, because right now we do some training, and sometimes we have two or three apparatus out of service for that training event in a short 3-hour period or something.
We typically our training on shift.
Right. So we now if we have this extra crew kind of running around doing some stuff, it would be beneficial. I'm not sure how it all looks. I'd have to pencil it all out in paper and look at the manpower and those things. But I've become more open to those ideas. And like say, Craig and I do sit on the hiring committee kind of thing, I guess I would call it, and we have those conversations with new employees. And those are some of the things that come up.
Yeah.
Those are some of the things, the conversations we have.
I know the city of Moorhead and other departments have been entertaining conversations with people for positions who are interested in the job, but maybe they only want to work 32 or 34 hours a week, not 40. They're still interested in benefits, you know. And, you know, right now, kind of that threshold, that cutoff of benefits, kind of at that federal level is 30 hours.
Right, right.
And so we're starting to see on the other side that there are people who say, I'm interested in doing the job. I just don't want to put that much time into it. And I might be looking around to see what I can find in that kind of range. That's the range that I'm looking for. So on the fire department side, you know, with our schedules being similar on both sides of the river, our folks are working an average 53-hour work week.
Right.
What if you get an employee who really only wants to work 38 hours a week, not 52, or wants to work 42? And that's where some of those 10s and 14s might come into that, is that they might be working less hours than the person working on shift, or another person who's picking up 10s and 14s. Does everybody need to work the same number of hours to be valuable, or do we have enough people wanting these jobs that will be able to stay with that model?
Do you do modified, because it's kind of funny when you say that, I sit here and go, well, no, why would we, but the rest of the city does it. The city has, it's kind of funny because our city was very generous and gave us some of the money that came out with COVID. They gave us bonuses. And so they had it laid out, well, full-time regular employees and then the part-time employees and the three-quarter employees. So the city has that stuff all in place already, and some of the departments are doing it. We just never have. But, yeah, maybe we should have part-time or three-quarter time person. I don't know.
You should look at Chris's face right now.
I can't believe the words when they come out of my mouth.
I know.
I never can't thought believe I would agreeing. Say it, and I'm not even saying it would work. I'm just, because traditionally I've just always looked at it like, no, you just, this is how we do it. But again, we're having to look at things and go, what do people want, and can we be flexible to it? And with government, I've always said, and I'm very proud to work in public safety and proud to protect the citizens and serve them. It's a very meaningful line of work.
Right.
That's what I've always said. I will never be rich, but I feel good about myself and what I do. And I love that aspect. Yeah. I love the people I work with. But we can't give stock options. We can kind of give bonuses, as we just found, but that's the first time in my career of almost 20 years, so
career,
I'm not expecting another one anytime soon. But we don't have that flexibility that, that private industry does to, hey, I got a good employee, so I'm just going to give them a raise or a bonus to keep them.
Right.
We don't have that. So to me, what we do have is flexibility, and that's where I think government work, public safety work needs to go, is we need to learn to be more flexible, because it, in a lot of ways, it's a no-cost issue.
Right.
So if we're just more flexible or we offer different schedules, that doesn't cost us anything, but it makes it maybe easier for us to attract and retain good employees.
I know our hardest shift openings to fill are the daytime shifts, weekdays. And, you know, just like you guys, I would have never thought I'd hear myself say this, but especially during the warm weather months, I'd be happy to entertain hiring a three-quarter time person who wants to work days. Sure. To come in and help us fill those shifts that we can't open. I'd take a good, solid employee who only wanted to work three-quarters time, but they were a solid employee otherwise, I'd take them in a heartbeat right now, if I could.
Or be more flexible on days. You know, we do some stuff in Fargo that you work 4-10s, you know, or 3-12s, whatever you want to, make it work out. Be a little more flexible, I guess, when in some of these positions that are out there, if it's, you know, fire prevention or the training.
Right.
You know, I don't want to, because I know we're going on record, but I'm not... Why couldn't a training guy work 12-hour shifts?
Yep.
We work, you know, we train three-hour blocks, and they have some time in between.
Yep.
I don't want to say that on record.
No, right. It's not a grand plan.
My shift guys would be mad because I would say that we're going training at 5 o'clock.
But those are the things that we need to be discussing and looking at, because if it helps us overall as an organization, then it may be worth doing.
Absolutely.
If you cross that with peak call times too, and I don't really know what the numbers are.
Yeah.
But there are times where maybe it does make more sense. And I think we actually do have some more spikes around the dinner time hour.
Sure.
And in the early evening hours late evening hours.
You look at Fire EMS, our busy time is from 3 PM to 9 PM.
Yeah.
Really, it's, you could even narrow it down to 4 to 7, 4 to 8, but that is the time
that
we
get
crushed.
The commute home. It's starting to cook stuff.
It's the car accident. Yeah, it's our call volume. That's the highest. And it's not just us. I've looked at many other fire departments and what their busy times are. It's the same thing. It's very similar for law enforcement. Yeah. We all see the dips and the spikes. You see the spike at bar close, et cetera.
Yeah.
So then do you staff for the highest, busiest time of the day? We know that's when it is. So do you put an
extra
QRU on it,
pick up and respond for medical or something. You start looking at those things, and I think those are all options. Those are also great options for the flexible schedule thing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So say we want to just run an EMS pickup out there.
Yep.
Okay, well, we got 10s and 14s for you.
Yep.
Or 10s or 12s or whatever we decide to do. It starts from 9 to 9 or something. You know, it's just looking at different things and trying to entice good people to the profession, I think, is the biggest thing.
Yeah.
It's surprising because Craig and I just went through the interview process. We are actually hiring 6 people right now. We brought in 7 for interviews. One actually turned it down in the end. But the other 6 were pretty excited.
Yep.
So it's still there.
There's still people that want it, appreciate it, and are excited about it.
So I don't want to sound like it's all doom and gloom around here, but I do think we need to be more flexible and be more open to some ideas. When you've been on the department for 28 years, you know, this is how we've always done it. This is what we do. Suck it up.
Yep.
It's the greatest job in the world. What are you talking about?
Yep.
I braced kids through it. I did all those things. So, but people are looking for different things nowadays.
And like you said, it's not that we mean that negatively, it's just that we haven't thought of it from this perspective, and now we're starting to, the more of this we're seeing and the more of it we're hearing too.
Hearing is the biggest thing.
Because right. That's part of it, is part of what we never had a recruitment committee before.
Right.
So now for the last 2-3 years we've had a recruitment committee. Part of what they're doing is they're going out into the community, they're talking to people, Why wouldn't you consider this? Why would you? What do you like? What don't you like? And we're starting to get some of that information, and that's what a lot of this is leading to. So it's not that, I always loved the 24-hour shifts because I loved the quality time off that it provided. But I also realized that just because I like it doesn't mean somebody else does. I just really hadn't thought
of it. Or someone that's more diverse than you or you know, gender different or something, you know, that that might be looking for something a little different.
Yep.
And like I say, there's a lot of options out there right now. You know, and I've always, this is the problem I've realized the last couple of years, because we've had an exodus from government in our city of Fargo, at least, in different departments, and even our own, looking for different things. But how does government compete with private business when I can't walk in and say, as a Fargo battalion chief, that I just talked to Moorhead. Moorhead would love to hire me at $20,000 more a year. Mm-hmm. Fargo can't, they'll say, I can't do anything.
Yeah.
Because we're budget restricted, we're pay scale restricted, we're all these things. So, and that goes for, that's fire is the obvious, but, you know, we have finance people, we have IT people, we have HR.
Public works.
Yeah, every business is looking for these individuals with skills, and they'll pay you more. So government needs to start offering a few extra.
That's where I think our key.
We have to be flexible, more flexible.
Will be flexibility, because we can't. Again, we can't give stock options.
Yeah.
We maybe can kind of give bonuses, like we've seen, which is fantastic and that's awesome. But I don't see it happening again in the near future. I hope maybe it will, but the one thing we can do, because it's not a cost item, is flexibility. So we increase our flexibility, and if that helps people want to work for us, then that to me is worth looking into.
Yeah, times have changed. It really has. I think, you know, being late is an important, you know, you're late, you're in trouble. I don't think my wife has been on time at work for the last 2 years. You know, and she just rolls in.
Whatever.
I'll do what I do. Leave when I leave. Adjust my, maybe in my lunch hour, maybe. You know, and she's still getting paid the same.
And for us, that's a primal sin.
Oh, you're late at fire service. You're in big trouble. And I'm not saying, you know, obviously I'm a big fan of being on time at work. When you're scheduled, you should be there. And I'm not saying that should be it, but it used to be a death sentence in the department. Now it's more of a, don't do that again. You're lucky you had someone cover for you type situation. You know, I still get a letter in your file, but it's not. Just be on time. That's all I'm telling anybody, any of my guys that are listening, be on time. But it's just, I really think flexibility is a big thing. And I don't know how to do that yet. I think we're still working. I think we need to listen to more of our employees.
Yep.
We are seeing, you said it's hard to fill day spots. We're seeing increase in people that want day spots in Fargo Fire.
Really?
Yeah, we're seeing people that, again, that's what they want. There's either their spouse wants it, or they want it, or both, etc., whether it be kids or other activities that they enjoy that are drawing them that way.
Yeah.
And we're fortunately in a position where we have a couple different divisions where those are options that have grown in our organization. So we have some ability to, if you don't want to work 24 hours, you've got some other options. But do we need to increase those? Is kind of what we're
and currently all those options are promotions.
Yes.
That's so maybe we look at you know, all our training captains are captains.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. We have three of them now coming starting next week. Three of them. Maybe we have a training firefighter.
Yeah.
You know,
it's weird. You want the experience.
It sounds silly to hear you say it, but when you really kind of look at it, you go, well, maybe it isn't so silly. Maybe that would be a good option. Again, if it'll help us retain some good people.
Retain good people, still do a quality job of training. You know,
yeah.
People are happier.
Yep.
I don't know.
Is there work that we are doing right now that could be done a different way by people working a different schedule for the fire department?
Right.
Would it result in any other benefits for our crews that we're having trouble doing now? Are we having trouble getting the training hours in or getting multi-company drills together? Are other things stepping in the way or not? I don't know.
Those are always questions you're always asking, I guess, and looking at the numbers and talking to people. But you know, our office staff, why can't they work from home some of the times?
Those again, you know, I think questions staff, we kind of have.
Why can't they work from home? Why can't your, you know, you can, I guess, you know, as fire chief or deputy chief or assistant chiefs or. So, I mean, start offering some of those.
Yeah, there are portions of the job, if it's not unreasonable, that there are times it's more advantageous to do work not at the station where you're available for, you know, any, any person.
You can only close your open door so often, Jeff?
Right.
I hear you.
When there's certain larger projects or a big thing that has to get done, you seem to chew off a lot more of that in 4 hours at home than in 8 hours at work with the distractions that come up.
Right.
And by distractions, I mean, you know, you plan to do a solid chunk of work, but if you're there, there are things other people want to do and advice they want to seek from you or decisions they'd like to have made. And they might delay it till the next time they see you or till the next thing that they're thinking about or handle it in another way. But if you're there and it's easy and convenient.
Yeah, there's just there's just a lot of opportunities. There are also, you know, we all know and recognize that apparatus have to be filled, have to have manpower, have to respond to emergency calls. That's our, you know, one of our main goals, obviously. So I think that always has to be there. And then can we do some other stuff to give opportunities?
Right.
And, you know, like Craig said, talk about 10-14s or guys working just 12-hour shifts or something. Maybe that works great for them for a couple of years, and then they want to go back on the 24s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe they're raising children through a certain phase or certain situation, or they got parents that are sick, or you know, they need that. I'll go to 12s or whatever, and then after 4 or 5 years, I would like to go back on shift. You know, it opens up. So
we've also never really around here had to market these positions.
No,
or the benefits that you get from an alternate schedule that we have.
Right. Yeah,
you know, some of those things you don't realize until you're well into your life or your career working 24-hour shifts, and you realize the parts of the 24-hour shifts that are really cool, or you don't, right? You don't notice it until you leave and go back to 8 hours, and you're like, shit, that was really nice. Gosh, I miss my in-between days.
I love the 24-hour shifts. Personally, it worked out great for my life.
It
doesn't mean it works out best for everybody.
No.
But I got to be home on middle, you know, days in the summer.
Well, that's something we started doing, too, this last go-around, was we added in recruitment classes is what we call them, firefighter informational classes, because what we find is a lot of the people that we have either had family in the fire service or a very close friend, and so they knew how the hiring process worked and what the job was like. And so what we want to use these for is an opportunity for somebody that knows not a whole lot about it but might have an interest in it. Go, you know, I do enjoy helping people and being a really active part in the community, but I don't really know what a firefighter does or what the job entails or what the schedule. And so we bring them in and we cover the pay and the benefits and the schedule and the job, and we talk about all those things and answer their questions. And then the biggest piece probably of it is our hiring process is not like any other process most people are used to. Closest is going to be law enforcement, as far as you want to talk about a long drawn out process with a lot of hurdles. That's what we have, and it's built that way for a reason, and it kind of has to be that way. But we go through that with people so that they understand it. So we explain to them that, okay, we open our application period for 3 weeks during this time. And then a month or two later, we're going to start testing. And then 3-4 months after that, we might start getting conditional job offers out for a list. And then a month or two after that, we're going to do a recruit class. And then 3 months after that, you might go on shift. People need to understand, that the process takes 6 to 9 months if you're successful with it. But then also what we try to do is put people that aren't sure about it or don't know much about it in touch with some resources.
Yeah.
So this is what our written test involves. It's essentially ours right now. Currently, we're looking at different options, but it's essentially a civil service test. Well, you can prepare for those. You can practice for them. You can study for them. Mm-hmm. And we do an agility test. Well, we offer practice agility sessions. So you can come out and run through our agility test before you have to take it to see, can you pass it, get an idea what it involves, etc. And if you can't, then you have some time to practice and get in shape for it. Yeah. But to help them through the process is what we're trying to do. We're not helping them. We're not giving them a... We're not helping them cheat or anything like that, but we're here to help you be successful in the process is what we're trying to give to people, so that if you really want to be a firefighter, we can help you. You're going to have to put the work in. I can't go and help you pass the agility test other than I can offer it and show you where you can improve and so forth. But that's another thing that we have added recently to try and help of our applicants, our interested people.
On the private sector side, a lot of folks are find themselves about to be in between jobs and decide to see what's out there in the job market, put some applications out there, and hope to be working for somebody else within a couple of weeks. Not, well, I hope there's an opening that perhaps I could fill 9 months down the road.
Exactly. I'm sorry,
I got to
Right, nobody can be unemployed for well, some people can, but nobody can be unemployed for
We're used to people who know they're working other jobs because they've been wanting to do this for a while. And they've been trying for a year or multiple years to try to get one of these positions. So the idea of testing in hopes that one day there might be an opening is right up their alley. But there are less and less of those people that are making up the mix of jobs we need to fill, and the cities are continuing to expand, so we need more.
Right.
Yeah, it's rather different. And the other end of it on the physical agility side and the training to get on board, I mean, the closest kin we have to that is military service, where you're indoctrinated, you're in, and you're there. And part of that, we don't even have people indoctrinated yet before we're wanting them to be able to demonstrate their physical agility to be able to do the job, whereas the military, they're going to run you through a bunch of stuff before you truly have to be able to you know, pass that test at the end of basic.
I would think, I was just thinking of the six individuals that we're hiring, without saying too much. They either have a paramedic background, so they're used to the emergency response, they have a fire background, or they have a family friend that's in the fire service.
And we're trying.
How do we branch out from there?
That's what we're trying to do. Is we're trying to get past that hurdle. And so we've reached out to some different community groups with our recruitment committee to help with some of that. It's difficult.
It's tough. Yeah.
It's been 15 years, probably, maybe 20, since we've hired folks that just had training to be a firefighter by going through a college, but have never worked the job or never had a family member who did. So otherwise, all of our recruits since then have been paid on-call firefighters somewhere else, or paramedic,
that's the other world that I see
one way
going
or the other.
Is our firefighter programs, our two-year degrees, our certificate programs, et cetera, at our technical college programs, they're drying up.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. They're not getting students anymore. Right. We actually, the Moorhead program shut down. The East Grand Forks program is seeing less students. And I think this is what we're seeing in a lot of trade industry jobs, is you're seeing less people going to trades. And I'm sitting here going, my gosh, this is the time to go into trades right now.
The guy that showed up to
work
at my
house, a lot of money.
Made a lot of money.
Yeah. But, so we're combating that by trying to recruit outside of that.
Yeah.
When I look at the applicants we've been getting from the fire programs, each year it's less because there are less students in those programs each year. So we're still picking up a few from volunteer fire departments and those types of institutions, but we're having to – that's part of why we went to you don't need any fire experience because – There aren't many in the fire programs anymore, and we're not getting a lot of applicants from volunteer departments. So we're just opening the doors and going, we'll train you to be a firefighter.
Sure. Yeah, and some people are looking for career changes. You know, we have one of the guys that's coming in next in the next recruit class is has a physics major from the University of Minnesota. He's an engineer at Honeywell. You're like, holy, this guy's got some education. He's like, I don't like it. I want to be a fireman. Yeah. I'm like, okay, interesting, you know? It's interesting. So he still got that a little bit. He does some fire service down on different areas, some volunteer paid-on-call stuff. So he's familiar with it. But it's interesting to hear the reasoning sometimes.
Yeah. Okay.
But like Craig said, in the last two classes we've had, two people pretty much say, I need to think about it.
Yeah.
And that's a flag, a red flag to us. I need to think about it.
When I started back in 94, a lot of things were different. first of all, you didn't call in sick unless you were laid out in bed and you didn't have a choice.
Right.
You know, if you were sick and you could, you came in and worked.
Yep.
So, more or less, you'd have to be in a hospital or bedridden, but I mean truly bedridden. If you got sick in the middle of your shift, you didn't go home.
No.
If worst came to worst, get down to your dorm room and just hang out there and make it through to the end of the shift. And, you know, you just prayed you didn't have a bigger call or you just made you the driver of the engine or something. You know, I mean, if you got hurt a little bit, where can we still put you? But you can't leave. I mean, you need to have a broken leg or something like that to be gone. And conditions are different now. I'm not saying that they're wrong. It's just different.
Yeah.
And when we had it that way, you could only take sick leave in day-long increments.
Right.
It would be a real odd thing for somebody to get so incredibly sick at work that the boss said, get out of here, go home.
Right.
You know, so people didn't take partial sick days. And now folks will take 2 hours of sick time to go to a doctor's appointment.
Sure.
Or to go to a dentist appointment. We also could only take full days of vacation.
Right. We've changed those things.
And now we allow, you know, I think we have a 3-hour minimum. It's either a 2 or 3 hour minimum that you have to take. And people who are scheduling full days get precedence and priority first. But if there are blocks of time that are open and your kid's got a basketball game that you want to go to and there's still an open vacation spot, you could just decide to be gone tonight from 6 p.m. until 9 p.m. And come back to go watch the kid's sports thing or to go play hockey on your adult in a mural hockey team thing. I mean, the people who just, I got this club. The time's open. Yeah. I still feel goofy about it, but I'm going to take 3 hours of vacation tonight, go do hockey and come back. Well, we would have been down if somebody had taken that spot anyways as a full day. So those are things that just wouldn't have been here before, and maybe those are some of those flexibility things that also people are looking for. The idea of maybe having modified vacations where if what's important to you and if your kids' sports are important to you and there are a few evenings that you're looking to be gone for 2 to 3 hours to make that work and we can retain you as an employee and make it work. I don't know if we're at that point that maybe we need to start thinking about that.
Well, be re-envisioned? I think we should.
And that was the other thing. One of the other things, because we did it a few years ago. It was probably 5 years ago now, maybe six, where we relaxed our living restriction.
Yeah.
It used to be 25 miles, and now we've gone to 60 minutes.
Right.
And so that, again, is part of recognizing that we have more people with their relationships where the spouse or the other half works a job, and it might be a job that pays more than ours, so they're going to tend to follow that job. And so by doing that, it allowed us flexibility so some of our people could live in another nearby city and their spouse or a significant other could work there, but yet they could still continue working with us where in the past they wouldn't have been able to.
Right. Yeah, that definitely has changed. You know, I think 28 years ago, this is going to sound old, but I was the breadwinner of the family, not insulting my wife's job or anything like that, but I was, so she would stay at home. Well, now things have changed. So now maybe firemen aren't the breadwinners, or they need to be more flexible too. The spouse needs to be at work for a meeting where back then it didn't happen. Didn't matter at that time. I'd be interested to see, and I don't know how many, we got thousands and thousands of listeners, Jeff, that
millions
that listen to that. I'd be interested to see some comments on what other departments are doing to be more flexible.
Right.
I think the sky's the limit. I think you're always going to have pushback, you know, somewhere in the department.
Well, and it's fun to start to have the conversations. This isn't the first time we've had these conversations, but the more we have them, the more ideas we get, and the more used to the ideas, I guess, I get too, that maybe we can do some things that we haven't done that might help us.
Yeah. And then, and don't be afraid, you know, I know Craig and I a couple of years ago went out to some private companies or businesses, yeah, and sought what they were looking for employees.
Yep.
We asked how they did interviews and those things, and try to change some of the ways we did that. So it wouldn't hurt for government to go out and look at private industry right now too and see what they're doing.
See how they do it. Our hands are tied to some extent, and I did some research on some of this stuff, and one of the things that I found is that leaders in good companies, if they find somebody that's a good fit or that's a good person that would be a great worker, they'll offer them a job even if they don't have a job for them.
Sure.
And we don't have that flexibility,
right.
But it's that mindset of we're always, essentially what it was getting at is they're always recruiting. So they go to a dinner party,
yeah,
they're recruiting, they're, yeah, evaluating, they're meeting people, talking to people. Would this person be good here? And part of that research I did also showed that your best recruiters for the fire service are your fire personnel themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so now we've been doing this for 5-6 years also, where we send an email out to all of our personnel on the department prior to us hiring, saying, hey, we are going to have an open application period. Please, if you have a friend, a relative, whatever, that you think would be good at this job, please let them know
about it.
Because the research found that people that work in jobs, whether it be fire, law enforcement, private industry, whatever it is, if you're working in that job, you kind of know what it takes and what qualities are good for it. And so the people you know that would meet that are our values, et cetera, for our organization well, they know them.
Yeah.
And so they know who fits it and who doesn't very, very well. And so that's one of our biggest recruiting tools is our own personnel. And so we put a big effort now into making sure our own personnel are part of that and they know about it and that we let them know. Because in our case, 125 people, that's a lot better than 3 or 4
yeah,
or 5.
If each person could get one person.
Yeah, if you think about it, you each have how many friends, how many relatives, and you reach out to, if every person reached out to even 1 or 2 people.
Right.
And you had half of those people apply, we're still better off than we are now. So just some things for consideration and things for thought.
How about take-home fire trucks?
Take them home?
Yeah.
Work from home? Well, about right now, I'm almost open to it, Jeff. I'm almost open to it.
Still haven't found a way to fight fires by distance.
Yeah, you still got to be there.
You can't WebEx the fire out.
Nope.
I did have an assistant chief back in the day that said he could command the fire from his living room, so I'm not sure why I got to come to work every day.
All right. Well, I don't have any other whiz-bang suggestions to throw in there.
I'd be curious to see if anybody else has other ideas.
Yeah, yeah. It'd be great if you reach out to us. Please let us know.
Send
your
Jeff
ideas
an email.
Yeah.
Be awesome.
And for those of you that aren't down south where it's warm, try and stay warm. Again, a lot of crazy weather these days with the wildfires out in Colorado last week here and some big storms hitting the East Coast.
Kind of
crazy. There's a lot going on all the time these days, and everybody's very, very busy.
I don't know how you have wildland fires when it's 28 below. I'm confused on that. But, we definitely have different climates around and everyone out there. Thank you for what you're doing, I guess. Keep working hard.
Be safe.
Be safe.
Catch you next one.
Yeah. Good night. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Tailboard Talk. Don't forget to tune in each week, Monday through Friday, 5:30 p.m. Eastern, 8:30 p.m. Pacific, for Fire Engineering Talk Radio. You can also subscribe to all of our shows on iTunes. Just search for Fire Engineering Talk Radio. Check out our educational programs and consultation services. They're all available at tailboardconsulting.com. There you can find links to all of our shows and our magazine articles. Thanks for listening, and join us again next month for another episode of Tailboard Talk on Fire Engineering Talk Radio.